and all once again to Duel World in episode 109. We're going to kick off our pre-E3 spectacular this week with third party at E3. But before we get there, let's introduce our panel of gamers. We have Jason.
Hello once again.
And joining us again, we have Phil.
Hello from the underworld.
At least somebody admits Canada's hell. Walked into that one.
We don't have our European correspondents to beat up on this week, so.
Yeah.
So it's always best to have Canadians in around and wait. This is why we invite him over here.
Yeah, Canadians on reserve.
This week, there is actually a lot of news, but we're also kicking off our E3 coverage by, you know, looking at third parties, when they can possibly bring to the show, especially being that a lot of people have kind of given us guidance as to what to expect this past week with their financial statements. But before we get there, we're going to break down what we've been playing recently, and it hasn't been a ton because it's been a really dry month for game releases so far. It's almost as if they spent the entire first 3 months of the year releasing stuff and then forgot.
Yeah.
But, Jason, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. going off Daniel's glowing recommendation, I've been in the early parts of Far Cry 3, Blood Dragon, which, holy crap, there's a lot of neon in that game.
Did you play Far Cry 3?
I have not yet, actually.
Oh, okay.
So I've just gone straight into Blood Dragon. I'm liking it a lot. It runs really well on my PC, except for some reason, the dialogue isn't working, which it took me a while to realize, which I understand is one of the better parts of the game, so that's pretty disappointing. Hopefully I can figure that out. And issues with PC gaming, once again.
As I say, how did that get bunked? I mean, you would think that...
I don't know, and I assume it's not a widespread problem, because not that much comes up when I Google search it. You know, obviously, Daniel didn't have any problem with it last week. So I'm not sure what the problem was. All the music and sound effects work fine. And then I finally realized, I was like, you know, there's been a long time with no dialogue. I flipped on the subtitles and realized that there's actually a lot of dialogue going on. I'm just not getting any of it. So that's concerning, but the game itself is pretty cool. The AI is pretty dumb, but other than that, the weapons
dumb in
are
a good
fun.
Way, like does it make sense that it's dumb?
No, dumb in the way that 90% of first person shooters AI is really dumb and just stands there for you to line up a shot.
Do you plan to play Far Cry 3 after this? Like this?
Yes, at some point this year, hopefully over the summer, to pick up Far Cry 3 proper. But this is a cool little aside. Like, there's honestly no game like it. It kind of feels like playing Tron is the closest thing, I guess. But the Blood Dragons are really cool too, and I like that they have this kind of Big Daddy aspect to them, where they're not really. And they're more like a neutral party, and you can get them to kind of help you attack the other people, and obviously they'll attack you too. I think that's a really cool wrinkle in the gameplay. And other than that, I mean, I can definitely see where all the praise for both this game and Far Cry 3 proper have come from in terms of like how beautiful it is, and the package is a open world first person shooter. But, other than that, I wrapped up Injustice, which I talked about last week, and not much more to add.
Single player mode?
Yeah, the story mode is pretty... I will say the story mode is one of, if not the best story modes for a fighting game I've ever played, in that it actually has a story. The story itself is kind of okay.
It's
kind of comic booky.
Yeah, it's comic booky, and it's really fitting.
It's super comic booky. But, you know, that lends itself well to a fighting game, so...
Right.
You know,
did you play Mortal Kombat 9?
I did.
Okay. Did you play the story mode?
I didn't play
the
story mode in that one, though, so... I'm not sure if there are similarities.
There are many similarities.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fighting game fan. My, like, The only one I really get into is Soul Calibur. But
if you care about MK characters at all, that story mode is such a brilliantly stupid story mode for like the origins of a lot of these characters, and it's pretty good.
Hmm. Well, then there's that studio's pedigree showing itself again. Because the problem is now that I've done the story mode, I'm not nearly good enough to play online. I get my ass kicked every time I try. And I don't
have a character that you go to?
No, not really. And I mean, that's part of the problem. But like I said, like, I'm not the biggest fighting game guy. Like, Soul Calibur is my one fighting game that I'll like dedicate a lot of time to. And SC5 was absolute crap, so I haven't even played that much. But I don't know. It's definitely a fun game, but I probably won't be playing it too much longer. I got my thrills.
I mean, how is like this site like with Star Labs? A bunch of mini games and stuff.
There's a lot of other content there for, you know, people that are really into it. You mentioned the Star Labs. It's basically like a series of like challenges that'll give you like, you know, you have three objectives in a fight, and they'll throw in wrinkles like one of them, you're Kryptonite, and Lex Luthor's hit you with some poison Kryptonite. Or sorry, you're Superman, and you've been hit with some Kryptonite poison. So you're constantly draining health, and like you'll have objectives like don't get hit by debris that are falling, or you know, win with a throw and stuff like that. And so every Stars Lab mission has three objectives, and you get a star for each, and then, you know, a certain amount of stars unlocks the next tier. And then you unlock more other characters. You start with Superman, and so then you unlock other characters, Star Lab missions that way. So that's something you can take time into. And there's all sorts of, there's a whole like arcade mode that's actually pretty in depth, where there's a whole list of like trees, for lack of a better word, of like the classic kind of battle through a series of 10 enemies, you know, with like leaderboards and stuff. And obviously there's the online and a bunch of unlockables, pretty standard stuff. I don't know. It's a very good game. And if you're big on Mortal Kombat, I definitely recommend it. If you're big on DC characters, I definitely recommend at least trying it out, renting it or whatever. I mean, that's what I did. The story mode's a lot of fun. And yeah.
And it's unlockable skins, because some of those costumes are
awful. There's a ton of unlockable skins. And that's something that I've only dabbled in. And there's also a free iOS game, which I'm not sure if it's on Android or not. But and the two games will communicate with each other and unlock content in the other game, which is mostly skins, but, and then stuff
which
like
is,
background. No, it's cool. It's like cool. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, it's kind of sad, because that's kind of become a thing we don't expect from fighting games anymore.
Unlocking stuff?
Like, unlocking skins and stuff, because I remember, like, Street Fighter 4 sold you the skin separately.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's nice to see that we're kind of returning to where we were before.
Yeah.
Does anybody know if those DLC characters in Injustice are... have already been on the disc, or do you know if it's handled better than how the MK9 debacle handled those characters?
Because a lot of times it's just like unlock code, so it's stuff that's already on the disc, and you download like a 2 kilobyte text file that says, okay, this person has it now.
Sometimes too, and I think this is what Mortal Kombat does, is they patch in the character, Mortal Kombat. I meant Injustice, but also Mortal Kombat, but I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. But they patch in the DLC character, and then you pay to play. So, like, I played as against Lobo this week online, which is the first DLC character. But I didn't buy the right to play as him. So, which is an interesting incentive, I think. You know, you get to see the character.
Yeah, and if you think like they did that at Marvel Ultimate Alliance, where like if somebody had the DLC pack, you could pick the characters, but all you win if somebody had it, so you had to buy it if you wanted to continue in your own. So, you know, like, you don't want to level up a character that you don't actually have in your game or you can pay elsewhere. So, yeah. And you have to give Yobo the proper respect. He's the main man.
I don't even know who he is, to be honest.
He's the main man!
But, what's he from?
He's, I mean, he's a DC character, of course. I don't know if he's necessarily from anything. I mean, he's most famous, he associated with Superman because of the cartoons and the Justice League. But he had his own thing. Like, right now, I think the last time he appeared in the New 52 was in a Deathstroke comic. So, he's like, he's a space bounty hunter, basically. He's a macho Samus Aran. Yeah. And I believe the next character is Batgirl?
Yep, continuing the, over-reliance on Batman stuff. Which, there's a lot of cool Batman stuff, so it's not, like, a bad thing.
Yeah,
there are so many Batman arenas in that game, it is ridiculous. Like, why so many Batman arenas? Like, I love... Batman's my favorite out of all the DC superheroes, but still, like, too many Batman arenas.
Yeah, and it's one thing with the... There's a lot of Batman characters, too, which is one thing, because they're all completely different for the most part, so it's like, okay, whatever. But
yeah, I think the problem with that is... Well, not necessarily the problem, but Batman, as a concept, as an idea, has the best fighters because everybody in his universe is trained to fight. So it makes sense to kind of bring them into a fighting game. But yeah, there is, I think, what, there's 6 out of like the 22 characters are Batman-related? Or something like that.
Yeah,
so yeah,
about right. And plus Batgirl now. So
yeah, so I agree with it, but you know, it's one of those things where, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Okay, so moving on. What else have you been playing?
The only other thing was I finished up Super Mario 3D Land this week, and only to discover that I'm actually only halfway through the game.
Yeah, you're getting onto the real game now. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very extensive training.
Yeah.
Not a real game began.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at. And Luigi's Mansion's still a better game overall. But it's really good.
Well, I was hoping you'd come here and, refute your blasphemous claims, but apparently you have not been convinced of the holy grail that is Super Mario 3D. And,
no, I mean, it's a phenomenal platformer. But to be perfectly honest, there's only so much a platformer can do. That, I'll just leave it at that. I mean, you know, I'm not knocking the game by any means.
Well, you are knocking the
game. No, I'm not. I'm just saying Luigi's Mansion is better. But they're two great games, so.
What do you like better, Earl? Galaxy or 3D Land?
Oh, Galaxy, easy. Okay. Galaxy. Yeah. And Galaxy are my two favorite games of this generation.
Yeah,
Earl's been spending the week trying to argue that that's a trilogy.
Oh, to be perfectly honest, I said when I gave my answer that it was cheating 100%. I know it's cheating, but you have movie trilogies, like the Edgar Wright trilogy is considered the same thing, and that's not necessarily a the concept tree, it's the same thing where it's just the same director and the same characters who kind of use recurrent elements, but not necessarily have any storyline connections as a trilogy. It's a very loose adaptation of the term.
Yeah, I love Galaxy so much. The amount of hours I've sunk into those two games is insane. There's not a lot of... Because I play a lot of games, so I don't really get proficient in a lot of them. But Galaxy would be one of the games that I'm super confident that I would be able to, like, go into some sort of, like, world championship or something to play Galaxy. Because there's a lot of, actually, skill and finesse into those games. Because there's, like, what, 6, 7 different jumps to utilize. And every time that I watch, like, videos of somebody playing Galaxy, I'm like, oh, my God, he's not using the right jumps here. He could be... Like, I remember when Giant Bomb had it for their Wii Game of the Year 1 year. And I was like, and they're trying to, like, get up a ledge. And I was like, oh, my God, you're playing this so wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always painful to see people play certain games. I mean, from what I understand, and you can kind of, it's very difficult to talk and play a game at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
People. So, yeah. that, you know, there's that thing. But yeah, I mean, moving on, because I've already sung the virtues of Super Mario 3D Land before on my review, which I got in trouble for because I called it the perfect handout title. And all this other stuff, so yes. I guess to kind of tie in real quickly, I've been playing more of New Super Mario Bros. U. And I don't know what madman at Nintendo designed some of those courses, but I mean, if there's a testament to the dexterity of platformers and what they teach you as a gamer, it's some of those castle levels in that game and those airship levels where, logically speaking, I don't know why anybody has their gobble pools in their castle. That has to be a health hazard to anybody involved. But they do, and it has some of the tightest, most efficient platforming, jumping, timing-based, whatever you want to call it in a game. I said it last week, and I'll say it again. I really don't get the hate this franchise gets.
It's because it's very derivative.
Oh.
Oh.
Who is this British voice that just descended from the heavens?
Heaven is the right place.
And of course he comes to Brain on my parade. How are you?
I'm alright, thank you.
But yeah, I think it's derivative in as far as appearance goes, because
and style and music.
It's because people are just like, oh, it's another 2D Mario platformer, you know.
Yeah, but it's a 2D Mario platformer, but New Super Mario Brothers just reuses the same. It has a weird sort of kind of bootleg style about it. New Super Mario Brothers Wii U, New Super Mario Brothers U, is that what it's called? That game looks beautiful, but I don't know. It's just too many New Super. They need to change up. If they're going to do another 2D Mario, they need to like change it up a little bit, like how they changed it up between Mario 3 and Mario World, you know, that type of thing.
And I get that complaint to a degree. I understand this is a very kind of sterile art style for the franchise, and that it has been used in 4 games. I mean, granted, it's 4 games over, what, 7 years?
Yeah, but it's 3 in, like, 2 years or whatever.
It's 3 in...
And 2 in a few months of each other.
Yeah, that I think that's what hurts New Super Mario Bros. U the most, is the fact that it came out right after Super Mario... New Super Mario Bros. 2? I really hate the number and the name.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's so terrible.
It's very hard to keep track of. Yeah. And they should really ditch the new part at this point.
Oh my god, yeah. that's my biggest pet peeve on naming anything, if you put a new in it. It does not make any sense to me to do that.
I got why they did it the first time, and I even get why they did it the second time. But the third and fourth time, it's just...
See, yeah, the thing is the thing I have about New Super Mario Bros. Is it's not really doing anything exceptional. It's just sort of...
I would disagree with that, honestly. I think, you know,
it's just what we expect from Nintendo, you know?
I disagree with that. I mean, I will give you that it has a very Star Wars art style, and I will even give you to a certain degree that the music has kind of been recycled. But for what it is and what it's trying to do, for being a Mario game, for being a 2D platformer, there's very few games on the market, I think, that compare with it. It's a extremely well-done platform. It has fantastic level design, which is really important. It has, you know, it has new quote-unquote gimmicks and hooks and all this other stuff. So they do a great job of freshening that up, and I think some of the stuff they do at multiplayer is fantastic.
Yeah, but you could just say the same for Call of Duty, and people do say the same for Call of Duty.
I never embarrass Call of Duty personally, because I, you know, if people enjoy what they enjoy, they're going to keep buying it. I blame Activision for doing it every year, but if people want to continue supporting it for a reason, they have that priority. And I think if as far as I know, people complain that this is broken, this has changed in Call of Duty, but nobody ever complains that it's a bad game.
I complain that it's a bad game.
You complain about a lot of stuff, though.
Except for Blood Dragon, which you missed.
If people find something to enjoy in Call of Duty year in and year out, that's on them. I mean, at some point, I assume they're going to get tired of it, but until they do, it's Activision. Activision makes money off of it. Why not keep giving people what they want? And then, you know, changing it up so much, they complain and you give them what they want again. But yeah, again, I think the major difference here with this and Call of Duty is, yes, it's, you know, the time difference is up, but it's also different platforms. I think handheld and consoles, you know, like they share similar spaces and stuff like that. And I think if New Super Mario Bros. U came out this year instead of the end of last year with New Super Mario Bros. DS or 2, whatever the hell it's called, the gold one, which they should have done.
The gold one.
New Super Mario Bros. 2, yeah.
Which they should have called, they, you know, that would have been nice. And I also think, you know, like the fact that the console version tends to focus on 4-player co-op or 5-player co-op, in this case multiplayer, is something that they haven't brought up with the handheld. So there's enough different there, but, you know, at the same time, I don't want to see it again for some time, and if they keep their legacy alive of doing one per console generation, we won't see it for quite some time anyhow.
That being said, I am looking forward to that Luigi pack for it.
Well, and that's the proper way to do this game, I think, is that, you know, you do one per generation, but you kind of infuse it with new content so people go back to it later on.
Is there a date for that?
I know, they just said summer. As far as I know, Nintendo has dated 2 games for the rest of the year so far on the Wii U. But we'll get to that in news. So, yeah, Phil, what have you been playing?
So since the last time I've been on the show, I haven't been playing much, and as I was saying in the pre-show, it's really weird for me. But since the last time I was on, I've only really played Guacamelee, which is not newish, I guess. It came out, like, what, last month or a month ago, or 2 months ago.
I will just say this. I love the fact that games become old after they go 2 weeks. I'm going to talk about it. So old now.
Yeah. fantastic game. I did not expect to like it so much, just because when I was looking at it, I was like, oh, really? Memes? You're going the Borderlands 2 route of humor for this game? But
Hang on. Can I stop you there? Like, I don't even think there are that many memes in Borderlands 2. Like, people say this all the time. There aren't that many in Borderlands 2, and I've played that game enough to know.
Yeah, I love the game, and I played the shit out of it, but yeah, there are some questionable humor and parts that were kind of overbearing.
it's not quite XD memes all the time anyway. Carry on.
Yeah, like, it wasn't offensive. Like, you know, a lot of people trash on it, and a lot of people trash on Guacamelee as well. And Guacamelee is slightly less offensive because it's not really in your face, but it's just like background images and stuff like that. But there's some memes that are spoken or what with text. I mean, but yeah, no, it's a little buggy. The fidelity of the jumping and stuff like that takes a little bit of getting used to, but it is a fantastic Metroidvania game. It's not too long, I guess. Getting 100% took me probably about 8 or 9 hours, and that was taking my time with it as well. But it was super fun, super addictive. All the game references, not the meme references, but the game references to previous games are fantastic. They do that very well. But yeah, like I started playing it, and it turns out that I, you know, still really love the Metroidvania style format, and yeah, really loved it. Got a platinum in it. It wasn't too hard there. Oh, it's very challenging too. Like, there are some areas that are super challenging, and there's so much to remember. You get, like, this Ikaruga Outland sort of, you know, red-blue type of ability where enemies or obstacles will be in, like, the light world or the dark world, and you have to constantly switch. And then you have, like, all these different jumps or different moves that allow you to either go into the air a lot longer or farther or higher. So there's this one challenge where you have to utilize everything that you know in such a quick succession that it's like dyslexia for your fingers. It's so crazy. It took me like an hour to try to pass that one obstacle. But yeah, no, it's a great game. Other than that, I think the Rayman Legends app for the Wii U I was playing. And that's fantastic. it's a huge tease because now I just really want to play the full game.
Which is the point of a demo.
Yeah.
Or an app in this case.
Yeah, but it's basically a demo. It's what I realized after playing it. I was like, oh, okay, they're calling it an app, but this is definitely a demo.
Oh, it's a glorified demo. They say as much.
This is why I don't play demos, but they masked the name, so I actually got it.
I think the best thing they did about that is, at least as far as I'm concerned, is they show why you would probably want the Wii U version over the others, because
yeah.
I don't know how you're going to replicate the Murphy stages on those devices.
I don't think you are.
I'm still curious if they're going to do like smart glass and cross-controller support in other systems. That would be a way to get around it a little bit.
I feel like it's a way to get around it, but I feel like SmartCast, I mean, I
obviously those are both optional things, so they can't plan for that, but...
Well, yeah, but even then, I don't even know if SmartCast has the agency to do it, because this is really precise stuff. And I feel like any type of bag or any type of input today would really just screw up people, especially in co-op.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's super fun, it looks super nice. And like when I played Origins, I remember liking it, but I kind of played it, beat it, didn't really talk about it afterwards and kind of forgot the experience. And when I started playing this, I was like, oh my God, it all just came rushing back to me. It's like, this is why I like Origins. I remember now. Did you play all of the single player stuff?
Single player campaign stuff?
Yeah. Like not the challenges, but the actual, just the levels.
Oh yeah. Cause isn't that basically the first demo again?
Yeah, but that the Black Betty level is
good.
I
think I said this when they had the Black Betty level, but they had a Eye of the Tiger Detroit come out. And I said this, Ubisoft makes fantastic use of music in the Rayman games, because I remembered the Rabbids games actually had a dancing mini game, and they kind of had like these covers of the songs of the Rabbids dancing, and of course, Just Dance franchise is huge, so... They know how to use licensed music in a way that's meaningful and adds to the experience.
Yeah, more games should do that. I think Far Cry 3 used licensed music very, very well. Like, they had that one Skrillex song during the gameplay. That's when you should be using music, just like when something crazy is happening during the gameplay.
Yeah, and as we say without... Yeah, let's say, as we said, about 20 in Game of the Year, Saints Row 3 is one of those games that had made, it's still like the benchmark for me as far as games using music in a meaningful manner to not only drive narrative, but actually fits within the scene of what you're doing several times.
Yeah, other than that, I got some of the old consoles that I ordered from eBay and the Atari 2600 and some games. 64. I had an NES, Genesis, and Super Nintendo, but I didn't have controllers or wires for a lot of them, so I ordered that stuff too. So yeah, I'm about to delve into that stuff. I played a bunch of Atari 2600. Man, beautiful machine. But yeah, I'm liking it. My 64 doesn't seem to work, but I think there might be a way to get that. Oh, yes. Old fat Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Gear. I forgot how shitty the Game Gear is like a little TV inside of, like a little old color TV inside of just...
And very bad batteries.
Oh, yeah, very bad batteries. It comes with a charger, but you... It doesn't charge anything. Like, you have to play it with the charger. But yeah, interesting stuff. I'm gonna delve into those pretty soon. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Okay. And we'll round it up with Daniel. Have you been playing anything new and shiny?
No. Loads of stuff is coming out next week. Sanctum 2, I'm going to be playing that. And then there's new DLC for Borderlands 2, which I'm going to be playing as well. But nothing this week. Not like I remember, anyway.
That you can remember.
I guess I've been playing this. They made like because Sanctum 2 is a sort of FPS tower defense hybrid. They made a sort of 16-bit 2D tower defense game for people who, and you, if you pre-order Sanctum 2, which I did, you get it for free, which is kind of cool. But it's just a regular sort of SNES-styled tower defense game, which is a neat little time waster. Other than that.
Okay.
Do you guys say SNES or SNES?
Usually I say SNES, but I don't know why I said SNES in that just then.
Super Nintendo.
Yeah, we usually say SNES where I'm from. Yeah. I hear Americans though say SNES. Is that true?
Yeah, I guess I would usually say SNES or Super Nintendo.
Okay. So that's our grammatical lesson of the week on how you pronounce the SNES. And that will parlay into news, which will kind of be a double feature segment because we're going to do news while also talking about third parties at E3 because, as Chuck would have it, a lot of third parties opened their mouth this week due to financial statements. It wasn't in our schedules how it would work out, but it did. But before we get there, actually, we're going to talk about Sony because they had some announcements this week as well, and they aren't third party yet, according to other dude whose name forgets. That dude from Ouyao. But Sony has posted a profit for the first. Is this their gaming division or the entire company?
The entire company posted their gaming division's been profitable throughout the overall company struggles. Which is ironic because the gaming
they can't sell any games.
They had a weak quarter this quarter, and but the company turned its first profit in 5 years, I think.
Yeah, but didn't they get that by selling their headquarters in New York?
That was part of it. Yeah, they sold their headquarters in New York. They sold, I think, their headquarters in Tokyo as well, or Kyoto, or something.
If they can sell prop real estate every year, they will have no problem. They'll just run out of buildings to actually do stuff in. But, you know, kudos to Sony. And, you know, they have a bright future ahead of them. Speaking of, and they're very, very kind of, they've become a very indie friendly. They also dropped the licensing fee for independent developers on the PlayStation Mobile suite. Thoughts on that?
I'm not sure what to make of it. I know that some people have. I saw some people sort of go, "Oh, yeah, now Greenlight needs to do the same thing." I guess it's great for mobile because that means that now there's not like you can publish. I mean, I know places with mobile are still pretty limited, but you can publish to Vita for nothing, which is, I guess, is good for the Vita because it needs more games. And I guess if it's another place to put your game. And you don't have to pay for it, to license, then that's good for indies.
Yeah, I'm of two minds about it. Obviously, it's a good move to try to say, hey, you know, you're already making your game for iOS or whatever, like, bring it over to PlayStation Mobile, like, it won't cost you anything other than, you know, actual development, which still costs money. And that's kind of the other part where... I mean, the fee before was $99, which is the same fee I believe Greenlight is, and it's the same fee that iOS is. So if you want to make a game for that, that's not a significant hurdle. The cost of actual development is a bigger hurdle, so I'm not sure that in a practical sense it'll change that much. But as Daniel said, it's kind of cool that you can publish to PlayStation Vita for nothing if you want.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it seems like everybody's kind of making strides to appease in these, because I think at this point, they've all kind of bent over backwards enough for third-party publishers. You might as well go small and see where that gets you. I'm curious to see what comes of it. There's a lot of interesting independent games coming out now, and it's not just artsy stuff anymore, which I don't want to sound derogative about, but, you know, you can make a good game and still have it be an independent title.
The artsy stuff actually has... something substantial behind it, unlike some of the artsy stuff that we've seen before.
Shh, we won't turn this into a David Cage hate segment.
No, I wasn't even going to speak about David Cage.
I was. I really don't like Heavy Rain. But, yeah, let's move on because we have Sony in a couple, 3 weeks actually. Sony's the last company we're doing.
I like Heavy Rain, but I don't like David Cage. I think he's a pompous ass. But I also feel the same.
We're just going to movies.
I feel the same way about Phil Fish, that I don't really like how that guy carries himself, but Fez is okay.
Yeah, so,
but we
that,
love Dennis Dyack. I'm just kidding.
We don't
I'm just kidding.
Dennis Dyack. Apparently we should have a show sometime in the future where we actually list the people we enjoy in the game industry, because we do pick on a lot of people here.
There's nothing worse than game developers who have a lot of free time in their hands and just, like, speak opinions on Twitter nonstop.
Are you talking about Kamiya?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Cliffy B does it a lot. David Jaffe.
Oh, Cliffy B's not a developer anymore.
Well,
I don't know, that's
what I mean. Well, I mean, like, you know, people who are...
Oh, I know what you meant. I was just poking fun at him because he spends an inordinate amount of time on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, he does.
And most of the time, it's usually the same thing. He gives the same response, or he always tells you to check his history. But neither here nor there. Now we're going to kick it off with third parties and big news. And, you know, in the world of third parties, there's probably still very few bigger than EA, who announced this week two major things that's actually going to shape the company's direction for some time to come.
Daniel's favorite company, EA.
Daniel's favorite company. Hopefully he's not a Star Wars fan, because EA announced this week that they gained exclusive rights to publish... I believe they said core Star Wars games.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Disney retains the rights to mobile and social. So.
Which are the games that I'm more likely to be interested in? Unfortunately.
For me, it's kind of a wait and see approach. I mean, obviously, we haven't seen any of the actual games, so I don't know. A lot of people have been speculating, like, oh, we'll get the. You know, because they said, I believe they specifically called out Visceral, DICE, and BioWare is working on Star Wars projects. So obviously BioWare is working on the Old Republic, so that's not news. But people have made an obvious connection of, oh, well, you know, the DICE will probably do a shooter. There was already that first assault shooter, which looked a lot like Battlefield, that got canceled when LucasArts got shut down. I'm interested to see what Visceral tries to do, because for all the flack that Dante Inferno got, it was so much better than The Force Unleashed was. Whether or not they go down that route remains to be seen.
I was going to say, I'm kind of curious to see if, because, you know, there was a thing that came out earlier this year about them being done with Dead Space and Peter Moore saying, no, we'll, you know, continue supporting that brand. But I assume that brand is, I think they all but confirmed that brand's dead.
Well, they announced this week that, or they revealed during that financial news that Dead Space 3 is actually sold less than Dead Space 2 did. So that's...
So this is kind of what you get for taking away everything people liked in your franchise.
And trying to nickel and dime the people that play your game, and pretending that people who like cell phone games will buy Dead Space 3. Need I go on?
The microtransactions weren't in your face, though, in that game.
The thing they shouldn't have done is they made it break the sort of atmosphere. Dead Space was known for having, oh, the HUD's the part of the actual world, you know? Whereas now we only go to the benches and says, oh, pay some money, give us some money.
Yeah, but you didn't even know that was there unless you were kind of searching for it. Like, I had no idea that the microtransaction, like, I heard about it before playing it, but, like,
I have a problem with them being there as well, like, in general.
Right.
But I'm not going to go into that.
Like, I'm not going to defend the game. I don't think it's very good, but I just, like, the microtransactions in itself, it wasn't apparent that they even existed in the game.
Yeah, I don't think it was the microtransactions that really killed it. It's like, you know, it's pretty much, and this is kind of what Capcom's going through at Resident Evil 6, it's pretty much taking what people cared about in the franchise and trying to alienate those fans so that you can hopefully grab a wider audience, and when that fails, you're kind of off with a product that doesn't appeal to the core, and it's not appealing to anybody else, so, Yeah. It also helps that these companies have some really huge expectations for their titles nowadays.
As for, you know, games selling less than their counterparts, we are in the year of, you know, the console's life that all games are going to not sell as well as they used to. So I don't know why all these companies are shit.
Well,
I don't,
the idea
is necessarily true.
I think the idea is, and it should make sense on paper, is that this is the most mature, and I mean mature in the sense of how big it is and not necessarily the content coming out. This is the most mature that the audience has been because, you know, between the 360 and the PS3, you're looking at like 150 to 160 million consumers. And you would think that with such a wide base that your game should see some type of growth in sales. That hasn't been the case, and I think, you know, part of it is also that people have extremely lofty expectations.
And not to mention, it's a variety of factors. It's too many games, and, you know,
yeah.
expectations, and
too
know.
Many games that are too similar to everything else.
Well, I would say that, and also the fact that, you know, a lot of these games are kind of coming down in price. Like, why should I buy Dead Space 3 when I can get Dead Space 1 and 2 for like half the price combined?
There's been a decline in sales overall, though, in the past year.
You know, this is something we'll talk about over the next month. I'm kind of curious to see if these consoles are what people want.
Right.
Like, you know, it's going to give some life to the industry because it's new, it's shiny, it's going to get more press. But we've spent the last maybe 4 or 5 years kind of seeing people going smaller and smaller with mobile and browser-based games. And, you know, the 360 and the PS3 have become really decent media centers. I'm kind of curious to see what Microsoft and Sony offers to kind of get people out of that.
You know how we were talking about a couple of weeks ago where Tomb Raider didn't sell as well as they expected, but it still sold a lot? Apparently, Resident Evil 6, now Capcom made a statement that Resident Evil 6 sold over 4 million, but did not meet their projected sales target of 7 million. It just boggles my mind, like, what world these people are living in.
Well, yeah, we had this discussion with
Well,
Square.
We have
yeah.
to keep in mind, too, that these are publicly owned companies, so they do have to project what... You know, it's not just they're sitting there like, oh, well, we think we're going to sell 7 million. It's like... You know, they use math to say, well, this many
absolutely.
Sold of the last version of the game, and there's this many more. You know what I mean? Like, it's they have a legal obligation to,
and they have like you know, shareholders and stuff that they need to satisfy. Yeah, it makes sense, but
so. I don't think it does because what they're doing is just saying, oh, so we're aiming for this market, and this market is so much bigger. So we're probably going to sell this many more copies. Whereas what they don't understand is there's obviously the secondary market that they're stepping into already has a game that they want of that kind of type. So they're not necessarily going to go out and buy. What they assume is they spend more money and they they think they're catering to a different audience, and then they're automatically going to get more sales when it just doesn't work like that.
I think some of them know that they're catering to the same audience. They're hoping that they can grab that audience. I think one of the bigger things to come out of this generation is the fact that a lot of the big brands don't take breaks. Because in prior generations, we're seeing this with GTA 5. GTA 4 came out in 2008. It's been 5 years since then. So if you're an open world game, you kind of have, like, okay, people want GTA. Take-Two's not giving it to them, so we'll kind of fill that void. You compare that to Call of Duty, and Call of Duty comes out every year. There's no void to fill, but you see a ton of people trying to make first-person shooters to compete with it.
Well, Call of Duty steps on its own toes because it comes out not long after the DLC comes out for the last one. So
yeah, but I mean, it's a business model that works for Activision because people continue to buy the DLC, and then they stop supporting it as soon as a new one comes out, so the people are kind of forced to buy the new ones. It's a sound business strategy. If it's something, you know, again, it's not. Is it something we agree with? It's a completely different subject.
I feel like Rockstar is one of the best Western companies who, like, in terms of their business model, because they're kind of in between, you know, annualization. They do not annualize their games, but they're also not on the other end of the spectrum like Valve and Blizzard, who rarely put out games. They actually
have like about an annual release, like, but right. they're not pumping out GTAs. And yeah. You know, some games are similar. You know, you could say Red Dead Redemption is essentially a Wild West take on GTA, but that's also completely different, and that's something that's enticing to a consumer a year after GTA comes out.
The only thing I will say about Take-Two, and I agree and disagree to an extent, is that a lot of the times they always seem to be on the bubble. Like, they seem to live from game to game. So their business model kind of makes sense, but at the same time, it also seems to hurt them. Because how many times this generation have we seen that Take-Two is on the chopping block, so Take-Two may be up for sale?
I don't recall any. There was a hostile takeover bid at one point, but...
Yeah, there was. I think it's happened 2 or 3 times this generation.
They've never been in a position that, like,
no, they've never been
in, for example. Or,
well, no, I'm not saying that they've been broke, but they have kind of, like, if one of their games comes out and underperforms, they're kind of screwed as a company. And that's kind of, you know, it's a solid business model until it fails.
Well, Max Payne 3 didn't do as well as they expected it to.
Well, I think Max Payne was also, because it wasn't a game, like, it was a game they picked up in development.
Was it?
I thought it was a game that was already being... Okay, maybe I don't know this as well, but...
I think Rockstar purchased the rights to the franchise.
Rockstar owned the rights anyway, because they published the first two.
But yeah, I mean, I guess while we're talking about them real quick, and this isn't anything new or shocking, but they're also not at E3 this year. I don't know the last time they were at E3. Because they tend to skip out on they don't need to be in a dog and pony show because their games kind of do their own thing, so they're content with that. But yeah, they're not going to be there, so, you know, and
take
we already know
take
about
Take 2, is it?
Yeah, well, I don't think Take 2 is. They have, like, a room or something. And, I mean,
most
you know,
of the Take 2 stuff at events is 2K. Not Rockstar.
Yeah.
Time.
And we, you know, we just kind of had new GTA 5 promos, or I should say previews, not this past week, but the week before that. So yeah, there's that. And we haven't mentioned going back to EA real quick. You know, they said the Star Wars thing, but the other thing that they mentioned this week is that they're focusing on less titles this upcoming year. And I believe they only have 14 titles in development.
Only 14.
Including sports titles? Because that would be like half.
Yeah, including Madden, the sports, they have like an entire year. I think they have like 2 more set to announce, but their entire, you know, fiscal year until March of next year is kind of accounted for, and it's 14 titles.
That's a lot. That,
not for,
well,
EA.
For EA.
Not for EA, but that's still a lot.
Well, it's a constriction of the amount of games they used to, you know, and that's kind of the problem. And we'll kind of get to this
with
Activision.
That's why they laid off 900 employees recently.
Yeah. Well, we got confirmation of that. It was, I think, 10% of their workforce or something close to that, they said.
Really quick, before we move on to Activision, I really would love to see Criterion take on a pod racing game. Which is 100% wishful thinking and speculation, but that would be so awesome.
That would be something. Yeah, I would love.
I don't think that any of our hopes out of this EA Star Wars thing is going to come to fruition. I don't think we'll get a DICE Battlefront. Or
I honestly hope we don't get a DICE. Oh wait, Battlefront. Oh well, maybe. I don't know.
I don't think we'll get a KOTOR from BioWare because it just seems too obvious. And
no, I don't think
they just released an MMO that was KOTOR.
Yeah.
So
there is KOTOR 3. It's called The Old Republic. It's pretty decent, and it's free.
Jumping over to Activision because they also came out and said that they're focusing on four core brands, which is I think it's Call of Duty, it's Skyland, and it's
Warcraft.
Two others who and something else, I don't know. There we go. Yes. So they're also kind of showing it. Well, I mean, we've mentioned this on the show before because they honestly didn't care about any brand that was in Call of Duty. For some time, we've seen games like 007 Legends, granted for good reason, but the James Bond license, the Transformers license.
I seriously think the Transformers games were a fluke. They must have been.
I don't know if they were a fluke, but
well,
I mean, I don't think.
Yeah, I think they
I think they succeeded in spite of Activision, not because of them.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen a lot
especially
of games.
Especially since, you know, that studio did produce some crap Transformers games that were based on the movies.
Well, the
so they had to build good Transformers games despite having to, you know, funnel resources towards the crap ones, too.
Blur, and we could probably go down the list of Activision games that came out with no real marketing or backing behind them. The two of the bigger third parties are trying to say that over the next year they're going to have a much smaller output. And again, part of it is also ramping up the next generation, and you know, like, you need time to earn that technology and stuff like that. But it is interesting to see, and especially being that they've kind of all not shown their hand, but we have a good idea of what EA and Activision is doing.
They're both very predictable companies, so.
Well, I mean that too, but it's kind of, you know, odd that the kind of, there's really not much left for them to reveal at E3. Traditionally, I mean, granted, they usually don't. I think last year we kind of knew all of EA's games.
Well, they usually have an event prior to E3. That. Showcase.
But they also had an E3 press conference, is what I meant.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And Activision doesn't. Who was the other one? Konami.
Ubisoft.
And Ubisoft, which I think I've gone on record saying is one of my personal favorite third-party developers. And I don't think they really came out and said anything this week. Though, I mean, at the same time, we kind of already know their lineup. They have a new Assassin's Creed.
Watch Dogs.
Watch Dogs, which has a new preview out this week. New video footage as well.
Blacklist.
Sphinx Selvac, I'm sure they have Just Dance 5, they have Raveman, the Legends that we already talked about. So, I mean, granted, we didn't know anything about Watch Dogs going into E3 last year, so maybe they have another, you know, maybe they have another trick up their hat this year, but it seems like it's kind of safe to have an idea of what they're doing. And I assume they'll probably have a interesting, you know, sign up for the next Xbox PS4 launch, because Ubisoft is always there at launch with good and bad games. We all kind of
They're a big launch supporter, but
and it's smart business. Get there and, you know, throw a bunch of stuff at the launch and hope that one game sticks and becomes a franchise.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? I was just thinking of, like, if you line up all the known quantities from the three publishers we just mentioned, Ubisoft stands out far and away as the most unique, even with what's become an annual franchise in Assassin's Creed, that's so far and away different, so different from anything that EA and Activision are doing. And those two companies have a lot of similar products.
Yeah, and that's why I am a huge fan of Ubisoft, because they have a very diverse portfolio. Granted, not all of it is gold. I mean, you know, we had the pets and the dogs and the, you know, babies and stuff like that, those games. But, you know, like from Just Dance to Assassin's Creed, I mean, how many companies have a dancing game and a stealth-based action combat game as their two big tentpole titles? I mean,
Ubisoft has zero first-person shooters, right?
They have Sphinx.
Far Cry.
No, it's not.
Far Cry, but
Rainbow Six.
Oh, Far Cry.
Rainbow Six is, and we're supposed to, I mean, hopefully we see Rainbow Six Patriots. That hasn't been seen in quite some time.
Vaporware. But,
and they also had Red Steel on the Wii, if that counts for anything.
It counts.
Red Steel 2, and Zombie U. so they do first-person shooters, but they don't tend to,
They don't do first-person military. Well, I guess Rainbow Six.
They do.
But,
and Ghost Recon.
They kind of, I mean, they had the time of Cancy License, so a lot of their games is military based. But it's also kind of different in that they tended to be kind of modern-day. And I know that's Call of Duty's hook. But, like, you know, Rainbow Six, at least for an arcade, wasn't like a military campaign. It was usually just kind of like unique locations. And you did military.
I mean, it was set in Las Vegas the last two games, so
already
speaks very differently.
You know, very diverse company, and I'm excited. You know, some of their product kind of they had the Energy, which was their take on the Wii U Vitality Sensor, which never went anywhere. I believe they're also the company that had Razer Tag.
I wonder if we'll see Beyond Good and Evil 2 this E3.
No, we won't.
I was also going to say that we had, and they also, I mean, they've had some entertaining press conferences. Joe McHale hosted 2 years, and Aisha Taylor hosted last year. You were trying to buy Aisha
Taylor.
Yeah,
but then there was the year that James Cameron.
We were gonna kind of skip over that.
We're not skipping over this.
I, like I said, it's not been perfect. There was, you know, I think they had 1 year with Carrot Top. Again, you know, the year with the Razor Tag. So it hasn't been all rainbows and sunshine for them. But as far as third parties go, they're a very interesting company to watch. On the flip side of this, we have a not a company, but a branch of gaming that has really kind of faltered this generation. The Japanese. That's not racist.
We'll have to stop calling you Phil Fish.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, we've had, honestly, Capcom came out this week and they were like, and you know, we talked about having off the expectations for no reason, but one of their big things is going to be Lost Planet 3 for some odd reason.
It's gonna be what?
Rip Capcom then. Rest in peace.
What were we discussing, Capcom?
And Capcom relying on Lost Planet 3.
Yeah.
Stupid idea that is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out yet. It could be good.
I'm actually looking forward to it, but it's not going to be a successful game. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Because, well, I think Spark Unlimited, developer, they're not great, and they're not going to advertise it. They haven't been advertising it that well anyway.
Yeah, I've pretty much heard nothing about it since last season.
When is it out?
Soon.
Well, exactly. There we go. We don't even know when it's coming out.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's out this year because it's one of their big products along with Monster Hunter 4. And it's out in August. So Monster Hunter 4 makes sense because Monster Hunter is huge in Japan. It's going to be interesting. It also sounds like it sounds like a lot of the companies that came out this week have plans for next gen, but they aren't kind of betting the farm on it. So a lot of the titles we're going to see are going to be cross-gen titles.
Yeah.
And it's not like Capcom has any plans for that right now, which may or may not be good. I mean, we've seen, you know, a lot of people have said that Japanese have spent the entire generation playing catch-up. And it looks like they may start next gen behind the 8-ball as well.
Well, their tech looks good, at least. But, speaking of August 20th is suddenly, like, the day of reckoning for current-gen games. I mean, we get Splinter Cell Blacklist, Saints Row 4, and, what was the other one? The Bureau. All in one day. I'm assuming trying to get ahead of GTA, and none of those games are going to be on next gen, so they're not going later. But
yeah, but they can do earlier, and
yeah,
I mean,
you can only push the game up so much.
Well, the Bureau's already been in development for 3 years, so you know.
So it's it'll be an interesting week, that one.
Yeah, but we've seen before that for some reason game companies can't plan. Like, I'm not saying that they should do it like movie theaters, movie companies. Movie companies, like, you don't put out Man of Steel versus Iron Man because you know they'd eat each other's lunch. So you put them 6 weeks apart. And, you know, you stake out claims ahead of time. Because we have release dates for movies in 2015.
I think they try to, but the problem is there's a big juggernaut called GTA 5. That's what they're trying to get ahead of.
And I said it's a terrible time to be a third party this fall because between Call of Duty in November and GTA in September, you kind of have October, and that has Assassin's Creed. So, and then you have to launch a new platform. So, unless you are a major title, you're probably going to get short-sighted a lot of times. So it's going to be curious to watch. But again, you know, this is why we have E3. Maybe they have a lot of interesting next-gen projects that they're just kind of waiting to pull the curtain off of, and that's going to help their... But a lot of these companies come out this year, and they're kind of... Their expectations aren't that high for aren't high for this year as far as new products on those consoles go. We also had Capcom, who seems to be betting heavy on the PS3 and the Wii U as their console of choice, which is interesting for any third party to bet on the Wii U at this point. But yeah, I don't think they announced any games, but I assume we can see a new Sonic game or two this year. What is this, 2013?
Yeah.
So I think we're due for Sonic and Mario at the Winter Games 2014. And those are huge sellers for whatever reason.
Yeah, they're surprisingly huge. I was surprised to see the numbers for the last one. They're, like, massive successes.
I think the first one did somewhere close to 10 million.
Jesus. That's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah, you don't think about it because nobody ever talks about them. And honestly speaking, for Sonic and Mario crossover, not what I expected.
Yeah.
But that game was huge, which is why they come out every 2 years. So yeah, that's expected. I mean, the new Sonic game, it's Sega. I honestly don't know what else they have. They have, like, I guess, PC games like Football Manager. That's them, right?
Rome Total War.
Oh yeah. Total War Rome 2 is coming out on my birthday. Thanks, Sega.
It's expensive, though.
Wow, okay. So, just real quick, I looked this up on Wiki. According to Wikipedia, as of 2010, the game sold 7.09 million on the Wii and 4.22 million on the DS.
Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Maybe that's the killer app that the Wii U needs.
This is kind of the new Super Mario Bros. U thing, where I feel like these games sell well because it's such a huge audience that it appealed to, but they were already at the system. They didn't buy the system for those games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it comes out this fall with Nintendo's big hits, you know, it could help them out. But who knows? Who else do we have? Let's not talk about Square, because Square disappointed me already this year.
Well, I would think we'll probably see their new Final Fantasy game on their new engine.
Thief.
I think there's so much to said that, right, at the PS4 conference? Like,
they didn't say that would be at E3, did they?
I think they said, we'll see you at E3 or something.
Yeah, that was their announcement at that conference.
It was like, hey, here's this trailer that's 6 months old, and we'll see
remember
you at
Agni's philosophy? Yeah. See you later.
In case you forgot, here is it in its entirety, once again.
Yeah.
Please be excited. But yeah, I mean, we might as well. It's been like 3 or 4 years in a row. We might as well predict that Final Fantasy Versus 13 will be at E3 in some fashion.
Oh,
again.
I think they need to. They're definitely gonna make a definitive statement about that game this E3.
You know, we said that last year. We said that at the PlayStation 4 event. We said that at TGS.
It's gone. Don't worry about it. It's never coming out. Then again, like, I say that, but Duke Nukem Forever came out, so now I feel like anything's possible.
Yeah.
We just need to get Gearbox to help them finish it.
Yeah. And the Last Guardian came out, too. Oh, wait, no, that didn't happen.
Oh, Square, our favorite Japanese company to beat up on. But that's not true, because Konami pretty much said that they're only focusing on Metal Gear Solid.
That's because the only thing that Konami does that's good anymore.
Yeah, they even canceled their Zone of the Enders game.
Yeah, oh my god, stupid.
Which I think Martin mentioned last week, but yeah.
I mean, it's other companies are kind of, we're kind of seeing it, and you know, this is kind of what some people predicted, is we're kind of just seeing a restriction where everybody's going into their big brands because they can't risk anything else, or you know, we're kind of seeing the destruction of the B-tier games, the kind of middle ground games that sell like a million units and make a profit.
Well, we're seeing those games move to other platforms.
Yeah, no. We're seeing those developers move to other platforms, but like, for major publishers, like, Zone of the Enders isn't a AAA franchise. It's a type of franchise that you kind of bundle with the Metal Gear Solid demo to do well, but it does well enough that you make a profit off of it.
And didn't they base their cancellation for Zone of the Enders 3 off of the sales of the HD collection?
Did they?
I'm pretty sure that was the reason.
Yeah, but this is what Konami doesn't understand. If that's true, you don't make a crap HD collection and then base sales off of it for anything.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I found stupid about it.
Well, I mean, I can see that because I mean, yeah, being crappy doesn't help, but I like the idea of using HD collection.
No, it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea, but it needs to work. It needs to work.
We said that before. If whoever has the time for this license decides, like, yeah, does the HD versions of 1, 2, and 3 put them on XBLA or PSN or whatever?
Well, let's put it this way. I don't own an Xbox, and if they put it on make it Xbox exclusive and they release it, I will buy an Xbox for it.
But yeah, it's...
But Konami doesn't know how to do history collections, and we've seen that twice now.
Oh, yeah.
You can't...
The Silent Hill
collection
was amazing.
You need to have a really good HD collection in order to... But like, if Microsoft... I know Microsoft would never have to do this, but if Microsoft-based sales based franchise interest off of the sales of Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary Edition, for example, then great, because, you know, they put a lot of effort into that, and it ended up being much better than the original game was. And even something like Ubisoft's HD collections or Sony's, you know, you could do that. But, I mean, well, that's what happened to Sly Cooper, Sly 4, because
yeah.
The Sly collection did well. So, you know.
And they even had the developer who did the Sly collection ports create Sly 4.
Yeah, I mean, the HD collections, if done well, or HD re-releases, if done well, help your own technology, help you get a product out there that kind of reminds people that this is a brand, a franchise you should care about, and, you know, helps the developer get familiar with the technology. I mean, we're kind of seeing that with Nintendo, basically doing that with Wind Waker HD. They pretty much said that, yeah, we were trying to port over various Zelda engines to the Wii U, and we're like, oh, we'll make a game out of it so that you can play it in the interim.
I thought you were going to make a joke about how New Super Mario Bros. U is just an HD re-release of...
It's not an HD re-release. It is a fantastic game, and I wouldn't know because half the time
I played
on the
GamePad. Yeah, it was a
fantastic
game the first three times I played it, too.
I would argue with that even still, because I don't like New Super Mario for this DS that much.
I'm just
I just really hate the hate that the franchise gets, because it's a very good franchise. It's just very sterile in design, which is especially, you know, very, very, you know, apparent when you compare it to 3D Mario games, which are amazing and unique and fun and creative and all that other jazz. But we're Japanese companies that aren't Nintendo and Sony right now. Who else is there? A lot of the other ones don't really make appearances unless they have something for Sony or Nintendo. Like, I don't expect it to be Evo 5 or Atlas or... I guess I can ask this because I'm kind of... What, I mean, if you were Sony and Microsoft, or I guess Nintendo to a certain degree, what third-party Japanese franchise would you want to show off?
Persona.
Persona seems like a game you can announce. It doesn't seem like a game that you put on center stage. Oh, yeah, it's just in a montage.
Persona has such a crazy cult following that has gained new heights since Golden has come out, that I think the announcement of Persona 5, like, exclusively on Vita or, yeah, PS4 or 3 even, it would work wonders for them. Especially Vita.
I think Vita makes sense, but, like, if it's Sony, I wouldn't kind of use that as a, like, if anything, I'd save the tick for TGS or something, because I think it's going to be the type of game that gets certain people excited.
That's a good point.
It's such a niche title that how many people are going to care?
Well, see, that's a big thing, too, is E3 is not the biggest thing for Japanese publishers.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, like, for the most part, OU Konami has it, and the only time they have a major presence is if they have if they have something to showcase at Nintendo, or I think, actually, there was, like, no Japanese titles at either any of their conferences.
I think we'll see them, just because we'll see them showing off next-gen projects, if nothing else.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, I could see Sony with Square and maybe showing off Final Fantasy or showing off an improved version of the tech demo.
Right.
But other than, and Metal Gear side, but we kind of seen that already. But other than that, like, what are you going to show? Like, I mean, if you're Nintendo, I can see it because they honestly just need anybody supporting them right now. But, yeah, if, you know, like Microsoft, like a lot of the Western companies already do the stuff that you want to showcase, and the Japanese haven't really embraced Kinect as far as I know.
No, because they made that stellar title, Steel Battalion.
Yeah.
Oh, it was first time.
We'll probably see, I don't know whatever happened to Crimson Dragon. I remember there was a tweet a couple months back that it was getting close to some announcement, but we still haven't heard. I don't know. I don't know that anyone cares at this point, but...
Yeah, and that's, I feel like that's, I feel like that's the way.
Unless their announcement is that it's a launch title for Kinect 2.
See, but again, that's not. I mean, it's something you put at E3, but it's not something that would excite people at E3. I don't think anybody's like, oh
no,
my gosh,
but if you're Microsoft and you need software to show off the capabilities of your new camera,
Kinect.
That could be something you throw into your press conference.
See, I feel like if you're Microsoft and you want to show off the technology of Kinect, you need to do it on, one, they're going to have to do two things, and I think, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see May 21st and E3, because Microsoft, basically, from rumors, seem to be fighting on two fronts. They want to embrace the audience that bought the Kinect and the audience that kind of made them a success in the last 3 years. At the same time, I think they realize that the company, the people that bought them to the dance, the people that made them relevant for the first 4 years until they really took off, were those gamers, and they're going to have to appeal to both of those audiences with this console at the same time. And it's kind of, I'm kind of curious to see where their focus lies, and how, you know, like, they can have a ton of core games, but are they going to be all montages, or is it going to be the usual staple of a Halo, Call of Duty, maybe Splinter Cell or some Rise, and then a bunch of Kinect stuff for half an hour? But yeah, again, that's, and I was just curious, because, I mean, with Western developers, I can think of a lot of companies you want on stage with you, but with Japanese companies, I think that their brands, like, they don't have those brands that stick out anymore. Not that, you know, Final Fantasy is still a name, Metal Gear is still a name, Resident Evil is still a name, but I think that, you know, except for Metal Gear, I don't think Metal Gear is damaged as a brand, but it's like, we've seen it already.
Yeah.
So yeah. I guess, are there any third-party surprises that you folks want to see or hope to see? And before we get there, let's just get our obligatory time spinners four out there.
Look, seriously, I'm the one who's probably the most wants it the most, and I don't even bring it up. I've abandoned all hope of that game ever coming out. Surprises, what would surprise me is EA announces that they're not going to be a dick, or they don't show us Battlefield 4, or they don't show us Need for Speed, or...
But they already announced Need for Speed.
Well, yeah that's what I'm saying. Is that a surprise to me? Because
and
it's
a non-Criterion year, so they might not focus on it this year, because it's going to be crap.
I just want Ace Attorney 5 to come out, and the Phoenix Wright Cross Professor Layton.
Hey, yeah, what happened to that game?
It got released in Japan, but there's no date yet for Western soil. So, but yeah, I want to play that game as well.
Well, you got time because they have what is it called? The Professor M5, is it coming out soon?
What?
Is it Professor M5 that they have coming out soon?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Or wait. Yeah. Did you mean Ace Attorney 5, or are you talking about...
Professor Layton.
Oh, okay. No, it's Professor Layton.
Is it on the fifth one?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
Yeah, Miracle Mask is 4. There were 3 DF.
Because, it's like 2 different trilogies or something like that?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, that's true.
As for me, I don't even know. I mean, I'm holding out hope that Sega surprises us with the Skies of Arcadia 2. I don't know why I keep doing that. Even a Skies of Arcadia HD would be something. I will triple dip on that game, but...
I want to know what Criterion is working on now.
Yeah, because they said it's not a race.
Well,
right?
Yeah. Well, since Most Wanted just came out, I would be surprised if we heard about that. But, yeah. I want to know, well, this isn't third party. I'll save it for the Nintendo podcast.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of curious. Is it about precursor games?
No.
At a certain time?
No.
Okay, Phil, Daniel?
I don't know, because at the end of the day, something that's not derivative nowadays would surprise me.
Yeah, I just want to see something that is new and doing something different and just exciting. And probably
EA, yeah, at this point, EA doesn't know how to do something that's not derivative, so...
If EA had to start this generation was really nice. Dead Space, Mirror...
I want that EA back, because then I would have to start playing their games again.
I also feel, and a part of it is just being a Nintendo fan. I feel like not to the point the Wii U is also going to diminish that, because a lot of the times they did stuff differently because they wanted to embrace the quote-unquote Nintendo audience. So I feel like stuff like Boombox and Boogie, which wasn't a hit, but it was something different for them, wouldn't have existed if they weren't trying to tap into that audience where they kind of know who to tap into with the Microsoft PlayStation audience, where you give them shooters and sports games and they're happy little peaches.
Yeah, remember when EA, everybody loved EA and Activision was the most evil company in the world?
Then, I think people still think Activision is the most evil company in the world. EA's just really, really, really taking the ball from them and becoming...
Yeah, it came out of nowhere with all this crazy stuff, like out of left field.
Yeah, I think part of it is that EA has embraced a lot of these alternative business models that gamers aren't too keen on, because I think some of them are good business models, they're just not really well implemented in a lot of games. Like, it came out this week, I think it was Epic Games that said that Microsoft and Sony are going to kind of embrace the free-to-play and in-app purchases model for their games, and a lot of people weren't thrilled about that. I mean, I like the idea of free-to-play. It's the execution that usually leaves stuff to be desired.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's like...
Yeah, but they're even on PC... Like,
if anyone
even
is surprised
PC,
by those comments, they're not paying attention.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It's a shame that, I know there's no such thing as a free lunch, but, it's a shame that we have these, because I see free to play as very predatory, even though obviously some people will say no, it's not, because you can play for nothing, but it can be very predatory. And I think if they approach it like Valve does in Dota 2, then fine, but they're not going to do that, because
I think what people call it is what, pay to win.
Yeah, pay to win, that's what I call it.
That's the thing. There are certain games where, like, I've been playing Candy Crush Saga way too much, and I haven't put a dime into that game
yet. I can't touch that game. I've downloaded it on my tablet, right, and I was paying it, right, and it said, sorry, you're out of moves, please buy money, please give us money, and I was like, yeah, no, thanks.
Yeah, what I do is I just wait. I mean, personally speaking, I do it differently just because... going to work, I pay it in the morning when I'm going to work. I pay it at lunchtime. I pay it at even. Usually by then, I get all my lives back because it's about 4 hours apiece. And your friends can send you lives. But yeah, I've paid it for about a month, and I haven't put a dime into it. I haven't put a dime into any free-to-play game, to be honest with you. But there are some where it does become, I agree with you. If it kind of gets to the point where, you're going to have to wait 12 hours to do this, or pay us $10 to speed it up, I'm like, yeah, I'll just not play your game.
I'd rather just not wait at all, because, since when can a game tell me when I can play it or not? No. I'd rather just cough up the money and get the game. But... obviously, I'm in the minority when it comes to that or something.
Yeah, a lot of people have been expressing the same sort of sentiment where, for free-to-play stuff, how the economy is so broken because of the free-to-play mechanic that a lot of people would just prefer to pay $60 to have a balanced economy, a balanced progression system, instead of, what you get with it. And I'm the same way. So.
Yeah.
The thing is nobody has implemented free-to-play in a way that actually benefits the game, except for the fact that the game has more players for multiplayer games.
Well,
other than that.
I mean, I mean, it depends, because I feel like, I mean, the thing is, it's like, I think free-to-play, and it's a very hard model to get right, which, you know, we've seen this generation, not everybody can, is that you want to kind of have it so that, you know, everybody can play, but the people who are willing to pay a little extra don't necessarily get a foot up, but they can kind of get through to grind.
And this is what I'm saying about Dota 2, is the only thing you get from Dota 2 is cosmetics. You know, oh, I would have Dr. Klein announce my games. Buy it, right? Whereas, like, everything that affects gameplay in Dota 2, you get. You just get it. You don't have to grind. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do that. You just have access to it.
I understand your point, and I can see it, but from a business standpoint, I'm just thinking, like, if it's something cosmetic and something that's not as non-essential, like, how many people are you going to get to buy it instead of something that's like, okay, you know what?
Which means that maybe you'd just be better off selling the game. And much more people would probably be much more, like, okay with that.
It's a very new model. It's a very infantile position. And I think going forward, I am curious to see how people embrace it, how people implement it in the future. Because right now, like you said, there aren't a lot of games that do it well, and it's a very hard model to get well because you want it to be stuff that's essential to the game, so that people kind of feel obligated to buy it. But you also don't want it to feel you don't want people to feel like, oh, you know, I can't have fun with this game unless I give you money on top of money.
And the thing is the thing that concerns me is what happens if I put money into a game. And because this has happened, actually. I put money into a free-to-play game, and it turned out to be not very popular. And the game is still up. I could still play it if I wanted to, but I have no idea how long that game is still going to be up. It could be gone tomorrow, for all I know. And
To be fair, though, you run that risk with any online game.
Yeah, but
yeah,
I usually buy...
a thing these days where there's a huge money risk reward for everything, especially like with the rise of Kickstarter now too, where you sink in a bunch of money and that game might not even come out.
I tend not to buy online only games anyway, so.
Well, I mean, I'm not even talking about online only games, but like, we've seen this generation, a lot of companies have kind of included multiplayer mode into their games in hopes that this would become the thing that keeps it around. I remember. I've played a couple of games, and I think the games that suffer the most to me seems to be third-person action games, because that doesn't always translate well into a online component. But I remember playing Stranglehold, and that has multiplayer achievements. There's nobody online there. I got Bloodstone the day it came out, and there was like five people online. I've got a couple of multiplayer games, but it's like there's no audience there. I remember even back on the original Xbox, me and my friend tried to play 13, if you remember that shooter.
Oh, that was cool.
We tried to play that online. There was nobody there.
Yeah, but like at the very least, if I enjoyed the single-player game, which most of the time I do, I can play that if nobody's online. Whereas free-to-play games, they tend to be online only, so...
And I get that, but I'm just saying. Oh, yeah. You know, anything you buy, you run the risk of not liking it, not having an audience for it, or, you know, just kind of being dead. Like, I'm sure there's people who probably own Call of Duty 2, and they can't, you know, nobody's saying that anymore, or something like that. So it's a risk, and you don't have to put in a lot of, isn't the whole point of free-to-play that you can check it out for free anyhow? To see if there's people, if there's a community.
Well, yeah, but when I put money into this game in particular, it's because I bought access to gameplay features, effectively, like new characters that had different abilities. So,
yeah, fair enough. I think we're kind of going off tangent here, and we're going to begin wrapping because, you know, third parties at E3 are always interesting to watch. I don't know if Konami has one this year. I know Ubisoft and EA have their event that Monday in between Sony and Microsoft Plus conference. So look forward to that. I believe that's June 10th. I don't know. I don't know if Spike TV's announced what they're showing or not showing so far.
I'm sure they'll show all of it, at least online, at the very least.
Online, sure. But I mean, like, you know, yes, probably used to have G4 TV.
I guess it depends on how long the show goes. They'll probably only show an hour tops.
Well, I think most of these shows are only an hour tops, because usually most people don't have anything to talk about for more than an hour.
Yeah.
You know, Sony and Microsoft kind of go an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on the year. But yeah, so, you know, that's third parties. Next week, we return with Nintendo, who have the most, well, we'll talk about Nintendo next week. Follow that up with a discussion on Microsoft, who also have a huge event coming. And then Sony runs us out at the end of the month. You know, so, you know, send us your feedback, send us your thoughts on what third-party games you'd like to see at E3 or what you expect from companies. I'm sure we missed a couple. We painted with broad strokes. We tried to hit the main ones. And, you know, that doesn't even account for all of the main ones. You know, check us out on the website. Jason put up his review of Luigi's Mansion 2. I actually haven't read anything. Actually, I was going to say I've been reading the Mega Man and Sonic crossover comics, and I've put up my thoughts on the first issue there. I would just say I think it's a blast. It's a ton of fun to read, and I really hope that Sega or Capcom or somebody decides that this would make a great idea for a video game. So for Phil, Jason, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 109.
Down on live.
Now we'll give it some time.
G4 live at E3.
Look at what's playing on TV. I can't believe it's for real. I just happened to flip on to G4. I can't even describe what I feel. Believe it or not, I'm watching E3. I never thought I'd get in so easily. Watching all day in my beautiful chair. What will I see? Believe it or not, it's E3. Just snuck a peek at a new game. Saw a sick-ass controller too. Getting me psyched for release dates to come, making all of my wishes come true. Believe it or not, I'm watching E3. I never thought I'd get in so easily. Watching all day in my beautiful chair. What will I see? Believe it or not, it's E3. Watch TV, lust for Xbox 2.